Lynn?
This issue came up during some of the public hearings we held at the Treasury Committee, and there was input provided by some investors during those hearings as well, that with respect to the auditors, they'd like more communication from or disclosure out of auditors with respect to key assumptions and estimates and what the auditors honestly thought about those. So that was something that we heard over there during those meetings, that investors are looking for that information. I think part of the issue here, though, is outside what you can work on, because I do think some of the issues just relate flat out to what the FASB, the standard setter, requires as disclosure, and it's very clear investors are looking for more than what they're getting out of the current standards. And I, you know, that's just not in your bailiwick either. The FASB or the SEC needs to take on that and deal with that issue. But as it relates to the auditors, it was very clear to us that from the public hearings and what we heard, they are looking for more information from the auditors, in particular how they audit it and what they honestly think about those assumptions and judgments made by management.
Good. And those are good comments, and we agree with those points. There were some, I've given some summaries from our room. I think Greg had some additional comments from your room on this subject.
Yes, similar to the other group, the our group was general consensus that the PCAOB might consider guidance in evaluating the adequacy of all disclosures, not just the fair value disclosures in isolation. Also, our group suggested that the PCAOB might, as an interim step, might need to emphasize the risk associated with the fair value disclosures, and this could be done in a practice alert.
Our group, Group B, had similar views regarding the importance of disclosures regarding, when our group focused on fair value disclosures. Our group also acknowledged or pointed out that today, looking at SEC enforcement actions or even PCAOB enforcement actions, there haven't been many of those type of enforcement proceedings with an emphasis on disclosures or a lack of disclosures, and in part that could be because of the difficulty in evaluating or saying they're blatantly wrong, and said that perhaps auditors view disclosures as a lower risk because they're not seeing much penalties being taken for disclosures that are perhaps less than adequate, and said, you know, one tool might be to have more of those type of enforcement proceedings so that to alert auditors and preparers as well as far as, you know, the importance of those disclosures.
Jeff, did you have your card up again, or is that from earlier? Thanks. Any other input from the group on this important subject of not just fair value disclosures, but the increasing amount of qualitative disclosures, the importance of disclosures to investors, and the need for further auditing guidance? Great. Well, thanks for that input. And Greg, I think you're taking the lead on the third topic.
Yes, the third topic, the final topic, is the using the work of a specialist. There were two questions in this area. The first one, should the same requirements apply for using an outside specialist and an employee specialist? Our group is of the view that the objectives should be the same for both outside and employee specialists. It's just a matter of how you get there. That is, the auditor should similarly supervise and evaluate the work of an employee specialist and an outside specialist. The second question had to do with what additional direction should a standard provide when evaluating the work of an auditor specialist. We had a good discussion on this, and generally came to the view that the auditor should should be required to have a greater level of understanding of the assumptions and methods of the auditor specialist than currently exists today. And auditors also cannot treat the specialist report as a black box. That is, the auditor should determine if the results contained in the specialist report are the results reasonable. So we came to the view that the auditor cannot just treat the report. You got a report, here it is, and leave it alone. The auditor has to have an understanding of the assumptions, the methods going in, and then have an understanding of the results that come out of the report and make sure those results are reasonable. The other groups have any other additional comments to add?
Our group was along similar lines as far as specialists that are within the firm, employees of the firm versus external should be same type of procedures. Auditors should, the objective for a standard should be similar, although some of the requirements may be different. For example, evaluating or specialists within a firm, employees of the firm would be required to adhere to auditor independence rules versus imposing that doesn't make sense on a third-party specialist, so you would look to objectivity there. So there may be some differences in requirements. We didn't spend a significant amount of time about, as perhaps maybe your group did, on the exact procedures that the auditor should perform in evaluating a specialist's work. But the group did acknowledge that the current language in AU 336, which is our part of our standards, kind of is more of a negative assurance type of review that you kind of rely on the specialist unless something comes to your attention. And there was agreement that that should be stronger as far as evaluating the work. The group also acknowledged that you're engaging a specialist because there's expertise that you need that you don't have in evaluating audit, gaining sufficient competent audit evidence. And the group also acknowledged that, the auditor needs that, they as part of their audit evidence, they do not make reference to a specialist in the auditor's report, so they need to take responsibility and do sufficient work. But, I think there was some discussion of challenges on how far do you go recognizing that you don't otherwise have the expertise. You need to hire someone for expertise in oil and gas or engineering or a lot of different type of specialties.
Based on the comments I've heard, including the discussion in my group plus meeting with the other teams afterwards about their groups, it does seem like there's a fair degree of support for some revision to our existing standard around the use of specialists. The existing PCOB standard covers use of specialists, both a specialist hired by management and a specialist engaged by the auditor. And there seemed to be a fair degree of agreement that there's probably differences in terms of those two types of specialists. The work done by a specialist engaged by management was viewed as essentially, pretty much the same work as if it were done by management. And that should be part of a, maybe an evidence standard, which is where the IAASB has management's expert basically in its audit evidence standard. But then looking at the, if you move into a separate standard with respect to the auditor's use of a specialist or the auditor's expert, as it's referred to in the IAASB standard, there was at least some debate that I saw about adopting the language that's in the ISA. I think it was generally felt that we needed to strengthen the guidance we had today, but that there was at least some debate about the ISA indicates that if the expert work involves use of significant assumptions and methods, the auditor needs to evaluate the relevance and reasonableness of those assumptions and methods that the expert looked at. It was less clear in certain areas. People generally felt that, in financial instruments, the auditor could look at the expert's work and understand the assumptions, the type of model that was used. Was it a discounted cash flow model or a Black-Scholes model or whatever it might be? Could look at some of the inputs in terms of what default rates were or loss and event of default or things of that nature. When you got into things like a geological survey, though, that an engineering study for purposes of measuring the amount of oil and gas in the ground, it wasn't as clear that the auditor had necessarily the ability to challenge his expert's work in evaluating the assumptions that went into the methods to measure the oil and gas in the ground. So I guess there was at least some debate in that came up about what the auditor has to do in looking at his expert's work and in reviewing that, and to what degree did the auditor have to understand those key assumptions, which were in this case were engineering or geological assumptions. So I don't know if anybody else has any comments on that, or if that was a debate in anybody else's room, but I'll be looking for comments now. I see Greg Jonas first.
I would encourage the board to avoid any impression in crafting a standard that it's fine for the auditor to outsource complex fair value measurements to outsiders. I think the auditor's relationship to a fair value measurement is different from the auditor's relationship to, say, an actuarial valuation or a legal opinion on a legal matter. I think fair values are a core competence of the audit profession. It would be kind of like a heart surgeon outsourcing the surgery part of the medical service to others. I think it's a mistake for the profession to do that, and I think we should expect auditors to be experts in fair value measurement. Now, that doesn't mean that the auditor doesn't, from time to time, need to consult with experts. Just as in inventory valuation, from time to time, the auditor needs to employ, say, an engineering expert. But the role of the engineer, in my example with inventory, is to enhance the auditor's competence. It's not to outsource the valuation of the inventory. So I think we need to be very careful here because, you know, complex fair valuations are new to many auditors, and there's a real tendency to want to treat that like we treat actuaries. And I think it's a strategic mistake for the profession, but I also think it doesn't result in the quality of auditing that we really need in this area.
Thanks, Greg. Galen?
Follow up on Greg's comment. I think I would agree with much of what he's saying. However, there's also this tendency to say, well, if we get a specialist, we can kind of rely on them, and maybe our skepticism level might not be as high. And I think that's one of the problems that we're running into. On the issue of outsourcing, regardless of the size of firms, they are turning to these outside specialists, and the smaller the firm is, the less likely they're going to have that in-house. I do agree that the engagement team needs to become more conversant and more knowledgeable on valuation issues, but simply said, they might have to go to outside bodies to obtain an opinion. When they do that, I believe personally that two things are required. That has to be that relationship has to be independent with respect to the issuer. That isn't any different than if they go retain another auditing firm to do a part of the audit. And then the second thing, I think that valuation firm has to express some sort of clarity of what their responsibility is, what the opinion is that they've expressed. They simply can't provide the auditor a discussion and an Excel spreadsheet and some calculations and say, here you go. I think if they're going to be a specialist, being a specialist has to mean something, which means that they provide an opinion, that they provide some sort of expression of what they believe, and that opinion has to be independent. Simply my opinion.
Thanks, Galen. I'd like to follow up a little bit on that, Craig. It's an interesting point. I just want to make sure we get your views correct here. With respect to the auditor using a specialist in connection with the fair value of financial instruments, you were making a distinction between the auditor's, you viewed the auditor's responsibilities there versus when the auditor used an expert to help them determine the amount of oil in the ground as part of an engineering valuation. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. I liken fair value measurements to be analogous to inventory valuation. When we're auditing the books of a manufacturing company, I think we expect our auditors to understand the inventory, understand how it's made. You literally become an expert in the process of creating the inventory. You understand its shelf life. You understand what makes it go obsolete. You can't do your job otherwise. Now, you may need an engineer to educate you, but we expect our auditors to become experts in the nature of the inventory and the accounting risks that result from that. Similarly, I remember had some clients who had asbestos-related litigation. I think it was right to expect that the auditor would become somewhat of an expert, not in the legal issues, but in understanding the nature of asbestotic-related disease, you know, talk to epidemiologists. I mean, you do a lot of work. You don't just outsource to somebody who has on their hat expert in these areas, and we wouldn't expect our auditors to do that. Yet, I think in the area of fair value measurement, you use the example, Marty, of a CDO squared, you know, we just almost say, well, that's too complex for any human to understand, so let's go get an expert to tell me and treat that expert as a black box. I give the expert inputs, the expert comes back with an output, and I accept the output because I have no basis to do otherwise. I think we should expect our auditors to become similarly skilled in understanding financial instruments as we do expect them to understand inventory or asbestotic-related diseases. I don't think that's too much to ask, and I think it would result in far better auditing.
Great. Thanks for that additional clarification and those comments, Greg. Anybody else want to comment on the subject of specialists? The rest of the team, did we get all of our comments from each of the groups out?
I guess I'd like to follow up on something that Galen mentioned about the specialist report, and the specialist should provide an opinion. What types of reports have you seen, Galen? Do most of them provide opinions, or do most of them have, or is it, I guess it's all over the waterfront, but I'd be more interested in the specialist reports that contain disclaimers saying they're taking no responsibility for assumptions and methods.
I think you hit right on it. I've seen a number of situations where they provide this, some work, and then they give it a disclaimer, and the auditor is relying on that. That is a huge hole for me. If they're going to qualify as a specialist, they have to be a specialist. They can't be something watered down from that. So I would hope that any kind of standard would get it at this. And of course, there's lots of different standards. We're talking about many different fields here, and these disciplines, each one of them seems to have their own reporting standards of what they can and can't express. And I don't think that necessarily means that they have to express the same type of opinion that we do, but it has to be some level of clarity of the responsibility that they are taking, and that needs to be evaluated by the auditors, whether it's something they can really rely on.
Good. Thanks for that information, Galen. Lynn Turner?
I'd like to come back to Greg's comments for just a second. And as I absolutely agree with everything Greg said about the auditor needing to be skilled when it comes to matters of inventory or other things like that. But I don't think the auditor is an expert in inventories. You just don't become an expert at a company going out there, you know, X number of weeks a year as opposed to someone who in industry who deals with it day in and day out. And there's definitely a different skill set. The auditor needs to know enough about it and understand it enough to audit it, but they are not experts in that field unless they've gone and done something more to get that expertise, which they might have done. And coming back to the discussion on education that we had yesterday, most business schools in their accounting program and in their business program do not teach people how to do valuations, including of many of these financial instruments. So coming out of school, people don't have the skill set to go do these valuations at the time they pass the CPA exam and get the CPA certificate. It is only if they go through further programs, such as those that the AICPA offer, that one really gets the skill set to really be able to call themselves expert. And a lot of auditors these days haven't done that and don't have that skill set. So I'd be very careful here about starting to tell investors that auditors are experts in some of these instances, as opposed to being an auditor providing a reasonable degree of assurance here. We can go overboard. If you're telling me you got a top-notch expert, that's a lot different than what I think of in the context of an auditor providing reasonable assurance on an issue within an industry.
Thanks, Lynn. That debate, I think, is similar to the debate I was mentioning that took place in the room that I was in yesterday, that where we are on the spectrum of what the auditor has to know with respect to when they engage a specialist, and it's a very complex area such as oil and gas, and an engineer does some work there, what the auditor then has to do with respect to that expert's work. There was some debate about that level of knowledge the auditor had to have around that. So I think it's an area we have to continue to explore. We did have some conversation with Arnold who was in our meeting about the ISA and some of the application material that was in the ISA as they thought that through. So as we work on this, where, as I said, a standard that I think we believe we have to work on, there is a debate here about this that we'll be paying a lot of attention to and try to get to the best answer possible. Further input on this? Sam? Sam Renzilla.
Thanks, Marty. I think as I listened to this and participated yesterday, maybe the real issue that you've got to resolve first is what is a specialist? 336 does have a definition of it. Maybe it's not a robust enough definition such that, you know, to Greg's point, core competency versus non-core competency ought to be maybe a place where you think about if it's in a core competency, there is no specialist. If it's outside of the auditor's core competency, that is a specialist. And maybe that's when you start to determine what the auditor's responsibility is. So maybe even stepping back one step from where the discussion paper was about what should you do, maybe we ought to spend some time thinking about what is a specialist.
That seems to be a very good point. Thanks for that.
Marty, I think Sam is absolutely right. I think, and that came up in our group yesterday. We talked about that. Because we throw around this term specialist pretty loosely, and you know, we've got the standard, and we know what we need to take into account and determine what a specialist is. But once we have a specialist, we sort of have this question: what if he is a what, and then and so what? What then? How do we proceed? There's an impact on scope. There has to be an impact on scope. And what is that impact? So, and I'm talking about the specialist that's working for the auditor now, not the fellow that's inside and controlled by management. But if you have a specialist, what does that mean? And I think that question has to be asked.
So that's further good input, and thanks for that. I think it's clear that this is a complicated area, the use of a specialist, and when the auditor uses a specialist, the definition of a specialist and what the auditor and what the auditor's responsibility is an important question as well. So we've received a lot of good input in yesterday's breakout sessions, further good input today, and we'll take that as we consider the revision to the specialist standards. And again, thanks for the input as well on the discussion on fair value measurements. Certainly we've gotten input that the fraud risk assumption was not widely viewed as a good idea by this group. But with respect to the adequacy of disclosures, we've heard about the importance of those disclosures to investors around fair value and other types of sensitivity disclosures, and important for us to take that up as a matter in terms of what the auditor's responsibility needs to be in those areas. So thank you very much. Greg Fletcher, thanks for teeing up the discussion yesterday and for the input from all of the members of the SAG on these topics.